Congratulations! You have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 606 of the Lambcast. I'm your host, Richard Kirkham, from Kirkham A Movie A Day. This week we have the movie of the month, and because it's October and Halloween is coming up, our movie is horror-themed. We have five movies competing to be selected, and in an exception to the rule, Lisa Leahy got a chance to champion a second film to Movie of the Month status after getting a horror film to the winner's circle last August, and then being denied the chance to host because Mother Nature was uncooperative. Of course, we can't get out of this trap by ourselves, so the show has a crew of assorted talents who seem to have been dropped in randomly. Or is it random? Yesterday he was trapped in a Chuck E. Cheese, today he's simply trapped into being on another Movie of the Month Lambcast from the Forgotten Film Cast, Todd Liebenow.
Yes, and I'll say in advance, I in this scenario, in this movie, I would be doomed because math is not my thing.
Hey, any booby trap intended to cut him into squares would be redundant. From French Toast Sunday, Nick Rehack.
Hi, hello, thank you.
When we opened another door in the French Toast Sunday green room, we found Jess Manzo was ready to join us.
I was just hanging out in the same room the whole time.
And now our special guest host. She was so proud of finally solving a Rubik's Cube, she thought we'd be ready to tackle this film. From the Siblist podcast, Lisa Leahy.
Hi, Richard. I've decided that despite the boundless human stupidity out there, I can live with it. I will keep going.
We've got boundless human stupidity in here, too. Believe me. Well, Lisa, give us a synopsis of your film, and then maybe you can take us to whatever rooms you want us to visit.
I would love to do that. So in 1997, director Vincenzo Natali brought us six strangers with varying kinds of personalities who wake up in a prison of rooms. Some of these cubic rooms are booby-trapped, some of them are safe, and there's no apparent rhyme or reason to how they got there, which rooms are safe, which ones aren't. There's the cop, Quentin. There's the clinic Dr. Holloway. There's the math student, Levin. There's the master of prison escape, Wren. And there's the architect, Worth. And we also have an autistic savant named Kazan. Now, sadly, we started with seven strangers, but, well, he left us in the prologue in one of the most interesting deaths I've come across in my time as a horror fan. They fear there's no way out, but maybe there is. Maybe there's something they can do to work together. So we talk today about 1997's Cube, which came to me straight to video in 1998, courtesy of Blockbuster, rest its soul. I worked there as an assistant manager, and it was a single new release along the middle strip of the outside new release wall. And I took great joy in frequently parroting home many of these films that were random that people didn't want so that I could see them beforehand. I didn't have to fight anyone for it because they were like, what the heck's that? Some random horror movie about people trapped. Nobody's interested in that. And I said, cool, I'll take it. It has come to be one of my favorites, despite the fact that it is a math-based horror movie, because like Todd, I would be in big trouble. Not only could I not recognize those numbers as such, I definitely would not be able to do the calculations that Levin puts out there. So that's my brief history with this film. I'd love to hear what the other Lambs have with this particular film, especially if this is your first time seeing it. Richard, I believe it is your first time seeing it. Is that right?
It is my first time seeing it. I've never heard of it before, and as I'm watching it, I enjoyed it. I, of course, flash back to my childhood and a Twilight Zone episode, and then when I looked and did some research on the film, it appears that this film was partially inspired by the Twilight Zone episode that immediately came to mind. So I kept having images of William Wyndham in his uniform as we were going through this exercise. Those of you who are not familiar with the Twilight Zone episode, it's five characters in search of an exit, and it was one of those, you know, odd Kafka-esque sorts of Twilight Zones that you got where you weren't sure exactly what was going on. And I'm still not sure exactly what was going on in that film. Well, I remember how it paid off. At least we got a little bit more explanation than we got in this one. I thought it was interesting. I was interested in the characters. There were a couple of things that I think I would have liked to see more of, but we'll probably talk about that more as we get into it. I don't want to keep everybody else from jumping in with their impressions, too.
Fair enough, fair enough. Jess, what about you?
I had never seen this before, but it's a movie that I had heard of for a very long time. I remember seeing the cover over the years, and not to be confused with Sphere, which I have seen many times. And it's definitely something that's up my alley of something that I would choose to watch, even if I wasn't assigned. And I enjoyed it for what it was. It's a little, like, crude around the edges, maybe, but, like, I liked what they were going for, and I was intrigued reading, like, the behind the scenes on it, and so overall, I'm definitely glad that I finally watched it.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. Todd, what about you?
I'm a first-time watcher as well on this. I had seen it certainly floating around out there because it does show up on the streaming services and specifically some of the free ones. I'm pretty much along the same lines that Richard and Jess were. I found it to be a for the most part, very intriguing film. It is, like Jess said, a little rough around the edges. And like Richard said, I think there's a few things that I think could have expanded on and such. I hadn't known the Twilight Zone connection, but now that you say that, I go, okay, that's the vibe I was getting the whole time I was watching this. This is like a feature-length Twilight Zone episode. And a lot of times when I run into movies like that, I kind of go, well, I can see why it worked for an hour-long show like the Twilight Zone and maybe wasn't as good for a feature. I think there's a few points in this where it maybe it's stretching a little bit to fill out its time, but for the most part, I was quite engaged by this film, and even despite the fact that my brain was going, I'd be dead in 2 minutes because math, no way, sorry.
Maybe you can use your brute strength then.
Apparently you don't see pictures of me on Facebook.
Okay. I know it's not going to work for me either. So I'll probably be, trying to calm everybody down, or I'll just be the one hanging out in the corner being like, all right, you guys let me know. I'll follow you when I'm done. Nick, are you new to Cube as well?
I sure am.
Goodness, I got everybody.
I had to do a podcast for Exploding Helicopter for a movie called Codename Vengeance, and I can only find it on eBay on VHS. And then I went down a little rabbit hole of buying like VHS tapes, and I thought I had this on VHS. Turns out I had The Cell, very different movie.
Yes.
So I actually had to – I started watching it. I'm like, oh, this is wrong. What am I doing? So I finally picked the right one, sat down and watched it, and I dug it. I kind of in the boat with everybody else. I thought, it's kind of rough around the edges, but overall I found the premise intriguing. I liked where the story went, and it's weird because I wanted to see more, but at the same time I was okay with what we got because it felt like I was with them in a sense. There were so many things that I didn't know and that we still don't know. But just all of a sudden it was like that stuff doesn't matter. It's about survival. And then seeing that and then obviously how everybody just decays is interesting in itself. So I dug it.
Oh, I'm so glad. So I got four people who've never seen it, but everybody liked it.
Pretty much.
I think that's a bit of a home run. I'm pretty happy about that. Thank you. I worked very hard on this movie. It's very close to my heart. No, I'm kidding. It's nice when you make a pick and everyone enjoys it. So I guess that's a fun situation. So, Nick, taking one of the things that you just said, I'd love to hear what everyone thinks as far as getting told enough. So I'm the kind of person where in any of my stories, I like ambiguity. I love a writer who can wield ambiguity like a weapon. In my reading, I'm especially fond of Paul Tremblay, who wrote A Head Full of Ghosts and The Cabin at the End of the World, two horror novels that definitely know how to use ambiguity. But it can be polarizing because people like to know what's going on. I love this kind of thing where, like you said, Nick, you don't know everything, but it also doesn't really matter. You mentioned there were some things you wish you knew more about. Can you give me some examples of those?
I just wish I knew, like, the behind the scenes, like, who made it? Is somebody watching? What's controlling the cubes? Who put it all together? Just kind of like, you know, the five W's and the H, just wanting to know everything about it. But then at the same time, being just dropped into it, like, I feel like that added. It added to the mystery. It made you wonder, like, are we going to find that out? It kept the intrigue going. The film could have very easily gotten boring and very one note, but it doesn't, because it's like, what's in the next cube? Is there a clue to what's going to happen next? And then when we start to find out that there's ways to determine where you are, it's like, okay, why did they set it up that way? Why all this, you know, extreme maths? Why were the people chosen? Because at least in, like, the Saw films, we kind of get, like, a little bit of a glimpse at why they were chosen or how they ended up there. But this one, it's just they're there. And I like that. Because I think, what is it, Dunkirk did that. The movie, it just starts and you're there. And you're like, okay, here we go. We're just in it to win it. And this does the same thing. And I think that level of heightenedness just adds to the movie.
Okay. Jess, what about you?
Yeah, I also – this movie made me think of Saw as well. I was like, I can totally see, like, James Wan watching this. Like him and Leigh went out watching this and being like, that's really cool. What can we do with some traps? But I think it, of course there's like, it begs a lot of questions, but one thing that I felt like we do kind of know based on what we're given is that whoever did this thought there was a chance that they could succeed because they chose people that had specific skills and things that could combine to reach a solution. So to me, that's like a very intriguing part of the movie, is that, you know, whoever put these people in there knew they were putting someone with some insider info, someone who was very good at math, someone who could literally was the linchpin of the whole scheme. Without Kazan, it was like impossible to get through. They had a doctor, they had an escape artist. Like, they obviously put these people together knowing that it wasn't impossible to escape.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that's interesting because you also take the elements of Saw being a single location film, and this is also a single location film where they were very, very low budget, and all of these different cubes, they had a single cube that they just changed the colors for. You know, I mean, so it's I've always been pretty fascinated by films that can make such good use of what little they have. And you've both brought up Saw so far, and it's one of my favorites as well, simply because of the surprise of it and the simplicity of it. And I agree with you. I think it's fascinating when you're given a chance, because there needs to be an underdog quality when you watch these films. There needs to be the opportunity for someone to overcome the conflict. Otherwise, we're just watching, I don't know, I guess a snuff film, you know, like, to go really extreme. And that's not my bag at all.
Well, and, you know, jumping off the characters real quick, I think one of the things that did frustrate me a little bit, and where I did want a little bit more depth, is just, I think that we kind of get the idea of what each character's strength is. I don't think it's quite pursued to the level that I wanted to get a more rounded picture of each of these characters, maybe with the exception of Levin, I think, the girl that is really the math whiz type of thing. You know, I kind of, as it went, had various questions about the different people. I mean, I especially have questions about that kind of that teaser, that James Bond opening that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie, you know, where we have that one really dramatic, death, you know, I'm like, well, who was he? What was his role in all this? Why didn't they have some kind of a struggle, you know, where, you know, it's like realize what this guy would have been able to contribute to the whole thing? You know, so there were a few things like that where I thought, you know, I think the characters could have been a little bit more well-rounded. I think they kind of have a focused path where it's like, okay, well, this character's purpose is this, but I don't think we get as well-rounded a picture of each character as I would have liked. And again, like, I think that that first kind of teaser at the beginning, I would have liked to know a little bit more about that. You know, how did he play into things? And I hate to say it, but I think the film kind of wastes its most dramatic exit, shall we say, in the first 5 minutes, you know? Right.
It certainly makes an entrance, that's for sure. I like that I already forgot what you called it, and I liked it very much what you compared it to.
Oh, to the James Bond entrances.
James Bond, yeah. Thank you. So I think of it as like Tom and Jerry. Where it's like the little different cubes of the person kind of falling apart, and I just think about that kind of thing. But I like your
It's very much. I mean, I guess I had never thought of it that way, but as a huge fan of like Tex Avery that style of animation, those nice. Type of things. Yeah, that's right out of those classic animated shorts for sure.
You can see what my childhood was all about. But I bet Richard really liked that second James Bond reference that you just threw in there.
Oh, yeah. I thought the idea that somebody out there has enough money to spend to create something that is amusing in the way you kill people, that I think is a little bit of the problem, but I appreciated their perspective. You know, it's Scaramanga. It's really there's some evil villain out there who is doing this to these people. It is, of course, it's a little preposterous to think that that's what's going on. It's much more likely that it is some government conspiracy thing. I mean, Holloway goes crazy, you know, the Pentagon, multinational corporations, who knows what the heck is behind all of this. But I can't think of a purpose behind that other than maybe it's infrastructure job work, you know, that somebody is making. Let's create something, you know, that's going to build us back better, you know. it's just so elaborate and so involved and so complicated. I think we need that, you know, what is it, the nuclear accelerator that everybody talks about that is going to be, you know, so useful in figuring out how the universe works. That makes more sense than this, but this is interesting. And when somebody at one point did suggest aliens, I thought, you know what, that would make the most sense. Mm-hmm. Because it is so elaborate and involved in they figure out there's got to be like 17,000 of these cubes that are moving around inside this structure. The idea that they have the architect who designed the outside of the structure, mm-hmm. so that they can kind of figure out dimensions, that seemed to me to be a little bit of a cheat. I know they're trying to get information in here so that we can figure out that there is a solution, and they just and we get a sense of how they have to figure that out. But the fact that he's the cynical, discouraged one in the whole process, and he's the one that would have the most information about the structure itself, but where it came from, you know, somebody. You know, I guess it's the cynicism that he has that, you know, he's just a guy at a desk doing a job and doesn't pay attention to what the heck it's all about. I you know, the world is full of people who maybe do that kind of thing, but if I got a job like that, I said, what are we using this for? If you were an engineer or an architect, you'd have to ask those kinds of questions. So I think it would have made more sense to find another way to get that information in there instead of having this person who's included in the group have this inside information, but it's just a small bit of inside information, just enough to be able to kind of explain this out. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's all very clever. You know, if I can jump ahead a little bit, I'll come back to the characters. I was just thinking about the thing that I like. The thing that I like best about the movie is the fact that this is clearly a low-budget film that mm-hmm. is making the most of its production design. You know, they basically have this one room that they use repeatedly to stage each of the scenes, but they find a way to make it look a little bit different with the color gels that they're filming in. They've got I like the cube kind of dissection that we get in the pre-title sequence that explains that. You were just talking about that. I could have used a couple more of those sorts of things. There were some suggested that we saw, you know, from a horror perspective. Out of the seven characters, only a couple of them get killed by the traps that are going on in here. The rest are killed by their own, well, you know, by somebody else in the group or by their own stupidity or something along those lines. It's just, it got a little, you set up this elaborate thing and then you're not using it enough to kind of create the horror. On the other hand, I'm not sure I just want to watch them being checked off one at a time.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, too, because there's only two characters who are killed by traps, one of them being Alderson, that first guy in the prologue, the second being Wren, who is dispatched within the first 15, 20 minutes. The main meat cast of this film, they, you know, take each other out. And I think that goes to what Jess brought up, this idea of, you know, like, is there somebody watching? Who's actually doing this? Which comes up in the sequels for this, definitely in Cube Zero, which is the third film, focuses on somebody who's on the outside watching. And we do have other films. So you brought up Saw, where somebody is definitely watching. You have the Belko experiment, where somebody's watching. You have the two escape room movies, where people are watching. You have the Hunger Games, where people are watching. You know, so I feel like this is a film that maybe used that ambiguity to add to the discomfort of the film itself, and maybe wanted to focus on, you know, how we become the monsters. You know, we brought up the Twilight Zone. I actually just showed my freshman this week Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. And you have the aliens who create this chaos specifically because they want to watch the people go at each other. And I think that's a pretty common trope in horror films, because as much as there's a monster, it always becomes about how people interact with each other under tense situations. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. That's interesting, Lisa. I hadn't really thought of that, about that. You know, it's just it's like the idea that, I mean, whoever's responsible for this, I mean, they could have just done, you know, maybe a handful of rooms with traps. The rest all happens because of the fear and paranoia of the people there, you know, they, like you say, they dispatched themselves. So yeah, that's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought about that.
What do the rest of you think? Nick, what do you think?
I would have to agree. I mean, my favorite horror film is The Shining. One of my favorite films in general is The Shining, and that's just how the people are monsters. I mean, we see it with I think his name is Quentin. I just watched it last night.
Yes,
I think I remember
Quentin.
How he's the fastest one to kind of fall apart, which is weird. You think he'd be a little bit stronger, because from the beginning he's kind of pushing everybody and kind of taking that leadership role. But I guess maybe it was too much too soon for him, and he just breaks down very quickly. Well, very quickly within the film, but, you know, within their context of how many hours it is, you know, he does his decay, and it's just, it's wild to watch, because even like physically he changes, the way his eyes are, the way his mannerisms are, the way his body moves and everything. And everybody else just kind of gets a little frail, a little weaker. And it seems like he's the opposite. He's getting like stronger. He's getting angrier. He's becoming that monstrous force that's kind of driving everybody out. He's the Minotaur trying to chase you out of the maze. And, you know, you might not make it out, because I don't know if we're getting into spoiler territory or not. But, you know, it's one of those endings where does anybody really win?
Yeah, and that's definitely fair. I think it's interesting because he has these arguments with Worth, and you know, he calls Worth out for being nihilist, Worth fires back and says, "Look, I'm not conceited enough to play the hero." And we hear more about Quentin's life outside of the cube, where he's got three sons, his wife has left him, he's a cop, you know, maybe he's one of those guys who just has that inner insecurity that he feels he needs to be in control, but then when he loses that control, he kind of falls apart and maybe relies too much on rage.
Well, I think there's also the implication that the personality that's required, I mean, in essence, we've got a bunch of stereotypes going on here. At one point, he accuses Holloway of being the equivalent, I mean, he says some pretty nasty things about her and accuses her of being the classic bleeding heart type liberal. And he is the embodiment of this idea that a cop is a sociopath who is simply disguised by a uniform.
True.
And that's, we should see this coming early on. And like I said, I thought that was the most cliched part of what was going on here. The notion that the people turn on one another or become the monsters, that I understand, and I think that works for the most part, that people pursue their own self-interest. The fact that it worked this way because of who the characters are, and I thought that was just a shortcut to get to those points. You know, it's easier for us to kind of jump onto a stereotype like that than to, you know, process something that's a little bit deeper and more involved. Like I said, I think the character of the guy who would be called an architect, I don't know if he even thinks of himself as an architect, Worth, he's just kind of cynical and out of it, and you're not sure at first, is that because he knows something, or is it because he just doesn't have the ability to cope with what's going on? I think that Quentin feels like he's got the ability to cope because he's got the survivor instinct that's going on. It's going to be elemental. It's going to be fundamentalist, basically, and it's just going to be brute force is what gets you through. And, of course, he discovers that you have to have a brain to figure out the solution that's going on in here. I thought it was also interesting, by the way, that the first person, once we get our group together to disappear from the group, is the one who should be the expert at this whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that. As far as the characters go, do you think it's a shortcoming of the writing of the film itself that we don't know more about them, that they are sort of using these stock characters? Or is it because the film is more focused on plot than on the development of the characters themselves? Could they have done both?
Well, it's just, go ahead, Todd.
Oh, no. I mean, they could certainly do both, I think. I guess my frustration with it was more like it seems like we only do as much to get them to the point where their skill is put into action. I think that a little bit more, shall we say, meat is what I was looking for there. I mean, like, you know, there we kind of mentioned that whole back and forth we get between Quentin and Holloway and the butting of heads. I mean, I think that, I mean, both of them, I don't think, are terribly likable characters, and both of them insinuate things about each other. And, you know, I would have liked there to be, I don't know, a little bit more of, well, what is the truth of things? I mean, she accuses him of beating his wife and kids and such.
Mm-hmm.
Does he really? What do we find out about what's really going on in this guy? Clearly he's damaged in some way. Same thing with her, though. I mean, you know, she you know, kind of comes across as this self-righteous and, you know, I'm the enlightened one on this world and all the rest of you are barbarians type of thing. I think it would have been good to move a little bit beyond those simple stereotypes and get a little bit better understanding of who each of these people were.
I think that's fair enough to start for a place for spoilers. What do you think, Richard?
Oh, yeah, I think, look, we've got a film that's more than 25 years old. Is it about 25 years old? And people who are interested in this are probably going to have already seen it. So we're okay.
I think so. Hopefully I can send more people to the Tubi and the various outlets to go see this one. I got four more of you, so let's start there. So, yeah, let's dig into some spoilers here and our thoughts about how these various characters are dispatched from the cube. Jess, did one particular death stand out for you?
I have so many thoughts circulating in my head because the way the conversation's been going. Mm-hmm. I have like all these like disparate thoughts about all the different characters. One death that really just like it was probably the most rough for me. I kind of would have been more satisfied if this had gone a different way, but maybe that would have been more like a rose-colored glasses ending. The fact that Levin dies the way she does, not that she was a saint at all in this movie. Like, she has her share of, like, I think nasty moments, specifically towards Kazan. Mm-hmm. But just, so this is my rose-colored glasses version of how the ending could have gone. Worth the nihilistic jerk character sacrificing himself against Quentin and Levin and Kazan getting out would have felt more satisfying to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, sometimes a brutal ending. I understand it, you know. But that's the one that kind of I was like, I guess maybe it's because Quentin got so harsh and brutal that I didn't like that. I didn't like him succeeding, I guess.
I think that's fair. And there's a lot of dissension out there about the ending, whether it's a fitting ending for a film like this or whether it is very dissatisfying. Todd, what do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was set up for the ending to be a bit more, I want to say, in your face. I think I'm basing that on like the opening, for example. The opening is the big, I think, shock moment of the film. And so all this build up, all this tension, I thought, well, surely they're going to dispatch with Quentin in a really dramatic way. And they kind of do, but they present it in a subtle way. You know what I mean? I mean, if you really break down what happens to him, yeah, it's grotesque. But the way they present it on screen is
he's a smudge on the wall.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. I guess I'm never one to say, well, it just splatter the walls with everything, you know. But you know, there's a part of me that said, given where, you know, the way the film built up other things, I don't know. It was a little bit of a letdown there. But yeah, I'm with Jess. I really thought that Levin not making it to the end was a disappointment. I think part of it, and this is, I think, a great success of the film. I think it kept throwing me in different directions as to who was going to be the quote unquote final girl. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even just talking about a girl. Okay.
For a long time,
I thought that it was going to be Holloway. I thought Holloway was being set up as being our final character. So when she ends up going, that part really surprised me. But yeah, from that point on, I was like, okay, well, it's all about Levin here. And when she goes, I was like, oh, that's, I don't know if I'm down for that. So yeah, I mean, of course we're not going to get rid of Kazan. I mean, that would have been, I think, too much for most audiences to handle, but, I don't know. I think getting rid of Levin may have been a bit of a miscalculation.
I think it's interesting because that's the one that's getting the reactions out of everyone. And I almost feel like then that's exactly the right move they should have made.
Well, because, I guess you could make that argument. Sure.
Yeah,
well,
for me, yes, because not that I revel in people's, you know, misery, but I feel like if you can predict everything that's going to happen and everything gets wrapped up neatly, I typically feel that you haven't done enough for me as a story receiver. But Richard, you were about to speak.
Well, I just, to me, the problem with that end is that Quentin is the one who dispatches Levin, and she dies in that particular manner. I think, you know, if we're rewriting stuff, you know, coming up with our own endings on these things, I like the idea that Kazan does get out. I would have liked the idea that Levin gets trapped inside the cube with the bodies still in that particular room, and then you get another movement. And and the film ends there. So she is going to have to figure out how to do this by herself, and then the screen goes, you know, blank, or the movie ends. So one gets out, one still trapped in by herself, and everybody else is dead. I think that that would have worked a little bit more effectively, as opposed to, you know, just the, well, Kazan isn't really the final girl. He's, we don't really know what goes on out there.
Or, you know, Richard, you're more diabolical than me with that rewritten ending.
You know, she could end up meeting up with another group of people, because I thought, this thing is so big. Surely there's other people in there. I was like, it's the Poseidon Adventure. You know, it's where it's beyond the Poseidon Adventure, where, oh, yeah, we didn't tell you in the first film, there's this other group of people that are in there, too, you know.
Another version of the ending that I kind of, this is how I thought it was going to be played, but it didn't really do this. And maybe this is a little sadistic, but I feel like it would have been a little bit more, like, a little bit more of an exciting ending for the villain of Quentin, is instead of him just kind of, like, laying there out cold at the end, if he gets trapped in there and he's the one that's, like, alert at the end and realizes that he's getting sucked back into it. And he's, like, freaking out and, like, realizing that he's now trapped again at the beginning of the cycle alone.
Yeah, because he really never does anything productive to get them moving along except bully people. You know, like, he's not the one testing the rooms. He's not the one figuring the math out. He's not the one caring for Kazan.
Well, he is testing the room when he throws forth into the laundry room.
That's true.
Is it safe down there? Let's find out, you know?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, I think there are more humane ways to check a room.
The one thing I don't think anybody's talking about, they could have survived.
If Levin, they had stayed.
Worth. And Kazan, no, at the very end, what do they do? Hey, there's Sunlight. Let's just sit here and take a second and think about it. Get out of the goddamn room. You're right there. Sit outside and think about what you just went through. They all deserved it. I'm not going to – when I saw that and you're sitting down, I'm like, you're all dumb.
The window's open. Take it quick.
Yeah. It's like, what are you doing?
I was panicking that the room was going to start moving again. I'm like, you guys know it's going to move. Just go.
Get out of there. I don't care how weak you are. You see that adrenaline's going to kick in. You're like, we got to get out of here. Let's hurry up and move it. And then you take your nap or do whatever. Like, get out of here. I was so mad when they stopped. I almost threw my little pint of Ben and Jerry's at the screen going like, move, get out of here.
That's a waste of perfectly good Ben and Jerry's, Nick. Hold on to that stuff.
I had some Cherry Garcia going on. I'm like, man, get out of here.
Now, did anybody get thoroughly shocked by the fact that the room they began in was the bridge? Was anybody – like, did that work for any of you? Or was that kind of like, all right, I see that that makes sense. That's what was going to happen.
I wouldn't call it shock, but it was kind of a moment where I was like, well, of course. You know?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of horror does that. Like, if we look at Saw, like, the answer was there from the beginning. Like, there's so much that they do now, it just comes back and becomes cyclical. And I think that's the humanity aspect of it, right? They all start human. They devolve as the situation goes. And as they find the end, as they find their redemption, it's like, oh, if we'd have just been human beings all along, we'd have gotten out of this.
I had, like, a thought that was there's, like, somewhat of a moralistic angle to this, in that if some of the characters had gotten their way and left Kazan behind, like, they would have never even stood a chance of surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, several of the characters, like, would have just left him. But he was, like, the key to the whole thing. So it was almost like they would have had to at least have some people, like, show the humanity and care to keep him in the group.
That's a really good point. They really could have screwed themselves over quite a few times. Him especially is the key to the whole thing when it comes down to it.
Well, I think they need to tip it a little bit earlier that he is not just somebody who is mentally different, but in fact he's, you know, Rain Man. And that he can do the calculations that she's not able to do. So she can, you know, she kind of solves the idea that this is a math puzzle, but they need somebody to figure the other calculation out so that they can decide these things. And by the way, I'm with everybody else on the math thing. I'll just accept that whatever they're saying.
I think they were making it up. I'm not gonna lie. They're like, this is baloney.
Kazan could have been like really pushing them to get out quicker because it's only 2 hours to Wapner's, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Priorities. So that brings me to one of my sillier questions that I prepped in advance. What's scarier in the long run, people or math?
I'm going with math all the way. Well, like Richard was saying, I sat back there and I went, well, I'm just going to accept that what they're saying is true about all this because it makes no sense to me whatsoever. You know, it's like that stuff just makes my brain turn into mush. So.
Absolutely. I mean, I was writing it down. I was going back with my closed captions and going, wait, what are these called? The permutations? What? Okay. You know, like, I'm lucky that I can follow the basics of this, like what the factoring is and these other things. I mean, I teach English. Math is not where I belong at all.
It feels like one of those Star Trek moments, you know, where suddenly Geordi or Scotty comes up with, well, we could do this and we could do this. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, let's put some math together and make it sound like it's particular. And I'm going, okay, whatever. You know, yeah. It's just,
and this film also benefits from the fact that it was, you know, made in 96, 97, because the internet, as far as being something that we all carried around with us, was not even close to being a thing yet. I mean, Blair Witch was 2 years later, and they're the first film to ever use the internet for advertising purposes. So I find it interesting that, like, whatever their math was, these filmmakers did not have that paranoia of being attacked on some Reddit.
Speaking of the internet, I thought, well, this doesn't work today in the age of Google Earth, because when they were talking about where are they, where is this thing, they said New Mexico. I'm going, dude, good on Google Earth. You can see all the remote areas of New Mexico, no problem. A big box sitting in the middle of New Mexico, it's going to be noticed.
Somebody's going to catch it. I actually was going through some reviews in preparation for today, and heaven help me, one of them began. Now, as this was an old movie, some aspects of it may not hold up as well as they did in 1997. I was like, oh, just shoot me.
97's an old movie. Damn.
Apparently.
I tell you what, though, it wasn't that bad, really. I mean, yeah, can kind of tell watching it, like, some of the lighting is off a little bit on the effects work, and really it's just, you know, the wires a little bit, and then obviously the structure itself on the outside. But compared to today, I feel like if they made this today, you'd have, like, maybe the doors are real, but everything else would be green screen. Everything else would have some kind of wild and crazy. They would try to have some Looney Tune way of killing somebody, and then it would just be like, here's my guts falling out, but it's not really my guts. It's like some kind of cartoony thing. Like,
I agree. I think this is better for the time period that it came out. Like, I mean, that acid trap alone and the first kill, absolutely.
Yeah, especially he just falls apart, and I'm like, oh, it's gross. Because it looked real, you know? I mean, obviously you didn't have, like, you know, blood everywhere and all that kind of stuff, but it still got the point across of, like, ew, gross. Like, it kind of reminded me for a split second of, like, a Hellraiser type thing.
Oh, sure.
Where I'm like, all right, here we go.
It's got the same pattern and everything.
Yeah.
You went in the box, you died.
Oh.
And I think the more impactful moment of that first death, I mean, you know, while the dramatic thing is, you know, all the pieces falling apart and all that, but the profile shot with the blood streaks across his face and such, that's the more striking image. I thought, well, that's really effective.
Absolutely. And, you know, Richard, you called me out for coming out with a Rubik's Cube. I feel like the puzzle box would probably be the one that I would end up solving, and we'd all be in trouble. So it's a good thing I don't play
Pinhead would show up for our podcast, and we'd be screwed.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad. But for some reason, in that moment, I would be that fool who's like, oh, my God, this is great. And then I'd be dead. So in a horror movie, I'm either going to be the sarcastic one that gets her head lopped off or mouthing off, or I'm going to make it to the end. So, or I'll be the killer. So who even knows?
Why not all three?
I mean, you know what? I might just go that far. So let me ask you this, because my first question in prepping, I come up with all my little lists here. On IMDb, this movie is listed as a drama, a mystery, and sci-fi. Did I get under the radar with this choice?
Well,
or is this a horror movie that's mislabeled?
You know, I'd call it a sci-fi horror, I think.
I agree. Yep.
When I looked it up on Wikipedia, that's what they said exactly. It's a science fiction horror film. And that's, as I'm watching it, that's what I'm thinking, especially after that first scene. Okay, I said, okay, because I was thinking at first, oh, this is just a science fiction film. Why is it a horror film? And then we got, you know, Julienne right away. And
yeah, give me a few, just give me 5 minutes, Richard. I'll prove to you it's a horror
film. I said, okay, that's a horror film. I'm down with that. But it's a psychological film more than anything else. And, you know, I said earlier, you know, it's not that every horror film has to have a lot of dismemberment in it to be meaningful, but let's face it, they've set this whole scenario up where there are more than 17,000 of these cube rooms, many of which are booby trapped, and we see what, 3 booby traps?
Yeah. And we only see 2 of them actually get their name, and I think you're right. It's 3, maybe 4 at the most of what we actually see deploy.
Yeah,
but if you think about it, Richard, the real booby traps were in our hearts all along.
Yes, this is true.
Well, I feel like on that note, Jess, you had said you had a list of things you wanted to bring up. Is there anything we didn't cover?
I kind of got a little bit of it out over the course of the episode. It was mostly the thoughts about, like, the morality. And I also, I guess, to put a pin in it, was Kazan being kind of the only pure character is mm-hmm. the only one to survive. Mm-hmm. And I also was like, is this, like, a weird, like, limbo allegory or something? Like, is this, like, a very, like, bizarre, like, this is their last step before they move to the afterlife?
I mean, it is a bright white light at the end.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But,
that's
a little bit too much, I think, for the course of the film's events, but...
So it's not hell, it's purgatory.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting because some reviews will call out the fact that Kazan being the only one to get out, you know, did he truly understand what was going on enough where that he could notify someone to what was happening?
Oh, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Hence 2 more movies.
Exactly.
They need 2 more?
Yes, they did. So there's Hypercube, which is the second film, where the laws of physics have less ability. So you think, you know, with the second movie, they throw more money at it, especially if one has been successful. So if you think about, like, Paranormal Activity 2 and Saw mm-hmm. 2, they up the ante. So they up the ante, or at least they try to with Hypercube. And then the third film is called Cube Zero, and that one's focused more on somebody watching on the outside.
Hmm. Does the Something Kazan character appear in the other ones?
No, I don't think so. If he does, I don't remember because it has been a long time since I've seen either of them, but I don't think so.
All right. So it's they're more standalones than sequels.
Correct. All yeah. Right. So I don't know. I think we've covered it pretty well.
I want to mention something that I did not realize until 5 minutes before the show started because I pulled up the Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
But all the characters are named after prisons.
Yes.
Did you know that?
I did. Yes, that's a good point. Yeah, they're all named after prisons. So think of Levin and Worth.
Oh,
and then
man.
You have
Quentin.
San Quentin.
Right in front of my face.
Yep. Holloway is a prison in London. It's actually a women's prison.
And for she's a lady.
Yep, Kazan is a prison in Russia, I think, and it's for convicts with mental illness. Ren is in France. It's a certain penitentiary, and from what I remember looking it up, I think they hailed it as one of those prisons that's kind of the model prison, like that's the one that sets the bar and everybody kind of follows suit. And Alderson is in West Virginia.
Well, at least Alderson I can go visit, but okay. I mean, not visit, but like drive by and go.
You do that regularly, do you there?
I mean, it's not far.
Some people, where I am. Some people go to baseball stadiums. Others visit prisons, apparently.
Yeah. And I mean, they do. They called out Attica when they brought up the wren. They called him the bird of Attica. He flew the coop on seven prisons. Okay. So that one brought up as well. No Alcatraz in this particular film, but, you know, he can't name them all. So, yeah. So that's 1997's Cube. Rotten Tomatoes score of 64% from the critics and 76% from the audience. An IMDb score of 6.2 and a Metascore of 61. So relatively fresh. So I think it's one of those films that I'm happy that it got voted. Frankly, I thought I was going to lose to another film. And Lake Mungo came up last, which I'm still baffled by, which means that needs to be up there next time. But that's a discussion.
Well, you'll have to wait for a while to be offering another one.
I feel very, very privileged that I was given a second chance and then I won again. So I'm definitely stepping back. I feel like I should be on a 2-year hiatus at this point. So I appreciate the chance, Richard. I do.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you got the chance, and I think you've done an outstanding job hosting the show, and you found a film that everybody enjoyed. You gave us the IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes scores. What we need now are our Lamb scores.
Yes. So, do you want me to start?
Yeah, why don't you start, since it was your film?
Okay, I'm going to start with 4 lambs out of 5. It is a solid horror film. It is one of the ones that I very frequently recommend to people who say, hey, I've got this streaming service and this streaming service. What should I watch? And if Cube is available, I definitely put it out there to people. And like I said, it's been a favorite for 25 some odd years, however long that was. So, yeah, that's my score. Nick, what about you?
I'm going to give it 3.5 factors of prime permutations out of 5. I really dug it. While I do want more, I'm happy with what we got. I think adding that mystery and intrigue to it just kind of heightens it that much more. I don't think I would go out of my way to see it again, but if it was on, I would definitely stop and watch it.
Would you buy it on VHS?
For the right price. Yeah. Like if it was at a Goodwill or like a library was doing a sale, I'd be like, yeah, all right, I'll pick this up.
Fair enough. Jess?
I will also give it a 3.5 out of 5. Which is kind of my go-to score for something that wasn't necessarily great, but it was very enjoyable. So, 3.5, 5, would recommend to people that are into this kind of thriller and can handle a little bit of gore.
That's fair. It is pretty, I mean, I guess with the exception of Wren, it's not too bad.
It's not bad, yeah.
So, all right, Todd?
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. Yeah, 3.5. Pretty much what Nick and Jess said. I'm right there with them. I think it's quite enjoyable, really intriguing, makes you think. Could have done a little more, but for what it is, it's a very satisfying sci-fi horror film.
All right, and the man with the golden podcast, Richard, what do you think?
I thought it was perfectly fine. When I told Amanda, my daughter, what the film was, she kind of turned her nose up. Apparently she had seen it and was not impressed with it.
Oh, Amanda.
So my expectations were lowered a little bit, but when I was watching it, I was enjoying it pretty much. And it does the kinds of things that I really like from these low-budget films. It makes the best use of the production it can. It does something interesting and creative. They don't go too much in your face with just going out of the way with the gore. I can see what they're kind of reaching for. I think it's just out of their grasp, but I appreciated the effort that they made. So 3.5 for me also.
What did Amanda think? Did she elaborate?
She just said she wasn't impressed with it. I don't know when she saw it. I don't know how long ago it was. She might have seen it back 15 years ago and doesn't have any memory other than she just was kind of shrugging her shoulders going, eh.
Yeah, fair enough.
I looked around. Somebody was mentioning it's playing on all these streaming services, so I started looking for it, and apparently it is on some of those free services where you have to watch commercials to see it. Mm. And I've run out of patience in my life for too mm-hmm. many commercials, so I went ahead and pulled the trigger and rented it on Prime.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
I watched it on Canopy, which
there you
is,
go. That was going to be my library
one, right? Card. Yeah.
I keep forgetting about that.
I got to do that. I got to do
There's
that.
A lot of good horror on Canopy, too. A lot of deep cuts.
So I'm trying to make more use of all the things that I'm already paying for. So I looked mm-hmm. around quite a bit first, and you know it was a good choice. I thought it was a very reasonable choice. A Halloween horror movie thing. It's not the kind of horror movie that a lot of people think of. It's not Hatchet. We could have had Hatchet.
I'm sure Jason's going to not speak to me for a while on this one. Like,
is that a bad thing though?
Ian,
I'm kidding.
I do a podcast together. I don't know how
Jason,
this works.
Jason, I'm kidding.
Oh no, he's a good sport about it. So he hasn't called me out yet. But we're up for another Between the Scares episode this week. So I'm sure he's going to come at me then.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up our discussion of Cube. Thank you very much, Lisa, for choosing that and hosting. We're going to take a short break for a few words from a fellow LAM Podcasting Network show.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
And we're back. It's time for our rants, raves, and reviews of the week. So it's our opportunity to share something that we're excited about, something that we're ticked off about, or talk about something that we've seen. Todd, how about you? What have you seen? What are you pissed about? What are you excited about?
So yesterday, as we're recording this, was the DC Fandome event thing, you know, because everybody's doing these things now where, you know, they do Netflix Day or Disney Plus Day or whatever. And, you know, they announce all this new stuff that's coming. And that's cool. I dig it because, you know, kind of pre-pandemic stuff, it was always, well, if you weren't one of the lucky people that got to go to like a Comic-Con or something like that, then, you know, you didn't get to see some of this kind of stuff. So I think this is a cool idea. I just wish that one of these services, one of these companies doing these things would do something a little more original with how they present them. They are all stinking the same, where it's like you have these actors that are a part of these programs or streaming movies or whatever, and they were filmed on a green screen, so they've got them in this weird animated environment, and they do these shots that look like they're this, you know, tiny little chess piece in this big fake room with figures of Superman and Batman and whatever like that. And it just looks so hokey and fake. And then these supposed actors start talking, and I'm going, how do these people have careers as actors? Because they are so stilted and ridiculous as they read these scripts. They look like they're on public access television. And I love the concept of these events, but surely we can do them better.
You know, I always thought that that was a problem. You know, for years I'd watch the Academy Awards and you'd see the actors, the stars, get up there reading the dialogue off of the cue cards. And I thought, wait, these are our actors that are supposed to be good, and they all sound like they're looking at it for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sorry about that, although I am I did see one clip from the DC Fandome thing that I would like to talk about at some point, so maybe I'll make that a little bonus.
Well, if you want. I mean, yeah, there's certainly plenty to talk about there. There were some cool things that we got to see, so yeah.
Nick, how about you?
I'm ranting.
Okay.
Not a happy camper, and maybe it's my fault. I've been at the movie theaters a lot recently. This past week I saw Lamb. Week before, I saw Titane, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, No Time to Die. Next week, I'm seeing Last Duel, I'm seeing Dune. I'm really tired of trailers. Before, the big trend was, let's get somebody to sing a really fun and upbeat song in a really sad, breathy, like depressing manner. Now the trend is, let's start a trailer, and then towards the end, we'll ramp up the energy by playing a song, and the song will cut out, and instead of the music in place, we'll just do sound effects to it. If I got to see another trailer like that, that is so bland and unoriginal, I'm just going to start showing up late and hoping I don't miss the movie, because I'm one of those people, I get there early. I get there 10 minutes at least before the movie starts, before the allotted time. I know I'm going to sit through trailers. I know I'm going to watch the M&M guys get strapped to a rocket. I know I'm going to see the same things over and over again. I've come to peace with that. But these trailers, man, I'm so sick and tired of them. When I finally see a trailer that does something different, I'm like, I'll go see that movie. I don't care if I don't like the actors or the director or anything I get. I'm like, I'll go see it just because the trailer is fine. Like, some people I give a pass, but most of the time, like, just do something original, man. Like, do something that people wouldn't expect. Like, the trailer for Cube could have just been, like, the opening sequence there where somebody just wakes up and all of a sudden they're just sliced up. And that's it. Cube, coming whatever day. Like, get out of here. That's wild looking. For the new Marvel films, just say, this is the character. This is who's starring in it. Here's the date. Like, I don't care. I'm so sick and tired of these trailers. Like, I'm just done. But I will say this. The trailer for Licorice Pizza, I thoroughly enjoyed. I love David Bowie's Life on Mars. I love Tom Waits. You put the two together, I'm going to be there. So,
Nick, come to the dark side, Nick. Stop watching them entirely.
This is where Lisa lives.
Lisa hates trailers.
Well, if I'm in the theater, like, I can't just put my head down and cover my ears because I'm going to look like a psychopath.
Oh, you mean like me? I literally shut my eyes when that damn Ghostbusters trailer comes on, and I'm at the point where I'm starting to remember it because they play it so much. I just look at my phone, and what I do is I'll watch a trailer. So they played the King Richard trailer. On Halloween Kills. By the way, Richard, I thought of you. The not just to mention the fact that it was King Richard, but the theater for Halloween Kills was full.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Was so excited. I
heard that it was doing very well. Good.
It's doing very well, so I'm like, thank you, God. Even though this movie is not great, there are still people here, so I'm happy. But as soon as I saw Will Smith, I went, okay, I think I know what this movie is, but let's double check. So I look him up. So while the movie's on, while the trailer's on, I'm on IMDb on my phone looking up whatever the movie is. And then I put it in my little calendar because I have a special calendar just for movie release dates because I'm that kind of crazy person. But I just sit there and I don't watch, Nick. It's delightful. I'm telling.
I mean, I'll do that at home. Like the new trailer for The Batman, haven't seen it. I'm not going to watch it.
Oh,
I'm just going to. I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. I know Paul Dano's in it. That's good enough for me. Like, yes. I'm just – that's fine. But I'm just so tired of it, man. Like, do something fun. Do something original. Like, just really get me to see it.
I want them to cut them. Make them shorter because that's the reason I gave them up.
Yeah, 30 seconds, a minute at most. If I had the time, the energy, and the software, I would take a movie, burn it to my computer, and I would make my own trailer and put it on YouTube and be like, this is how it should have been done. And then I'll get hired, and then I'll have a fun job.
Keep telling yourself that, Nick.
Yeah. But, you know, a dream I had 40 years ago.
What you're saying there, though, I mean, you mentioned specifically the Marvel stuff, and – I mean, though I admit I have a great deal of excitement when I see those Marvel trailers come out and things like that. But if you ask me what was the best trailers when it comes to those Marvel movies, it's Endgame, where they showed you almost nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Because then when you sit in the theater, you're seeing everything for the very first time, and it's pure joy. Like, people look at me like I'm an idiot because I'm like, oh my God. Like, I remember seeing Rings, I always say, is the first one that I didn't watch trailers for. I had no idea D'Onofrio was in this thing. And he shows up on screen and I was like, oh my God, it's D'Onofrio. I love him. He's nuts. You know, like, you even have that moment of joy. And I've been complaining recently because the trailer for The Forever Purge and the Escape Room sequel, neither one of them like super quality movies, but they are what they are. The endings to those films are both in their trailer. And that's infuriating to me.
Yeah, that's been a long-term complaint that the trailers give out too much information and spoil it for you. I understand that you're tired of trailers that work the same way over and over again. They use the same tropes. The music cues all feel familiar. If I hear one more Hans Zimmer kind of, you know, thundering in the background, I'm just going to go, what? You know, I understand. I do appreciate, but the, you know, they're selling. It's marketing. And I'm interested in marketing. I like the idea that they're putting something out. I'm sorry. I'm a consumerist. I like that kind of crap. How many copies of every James Bond movie can I buy in every different format that I can find with something else added to it? Wait, you've got a special insert that goes along with that? I'm good with that. When the trailer comes along, it sells me on the movie. You mentioned the Licorice Pizza trailer. I'm watching that and I'm going, you know, except for the storyline with the, you know, the potentially John Peters in it, that looks like my life. I swear that's my wife and I in that damn movie. You know, and I'm excited. And Licorice Pizza, I think, was, you know, the same sort of thing. I don't know if that chain existed outside of California, but that the title comes from the record store chain that was in Southern California. And that's when we were broke. That was our date. We would go to the Licorice Pizza or to the Music Plus, and we'd browse through LPs and not buy stuff. We'd just dream about what we could buy.
It's really sweet, man. Like, that's kind of making me tear up a little bit. Like, I cried during the trailer both times I watched it, but like, that's really touching, Richard.
Hey,
I like that.
And the costuming, that's also freaking accurate. It's ridiculous. My wife wore that dress that girl is in the movie that she wears. That one scene that they, you know, I've heard some criticism of it, you know, that it's just some male fantasy. I'm going, well, okay, but she had that dress. She had that dress, and I never had a shirt that was quite that flamboyant. But I've had shirts like that, you know. So, and I had a bad haircut.
This is fascinating. Like, I'm just looking this up. I had no idea that Elena Haim was in this.
Yeah,
I love the band.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman's son is in it too.
No.
That's what makes me tear up seeing him. And I'm like, this is what you know what I mean? Like, this is what we're missing out on.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm already starting to choke up. Okay.
See, the problem is trailers will draw us into something that we would have ignored otherwise.
Oh, I wouldn't have ignored this because I would have heard about it and said, okay, I just looked it up and I went, okay, running through. All right, this sounds good. I'll go see it. It doesn't take much for me. But I'm an odd duck, Richard. I think we've established this.
That's okay. That's okay. But the complaints, I think, are perfectly valid. We spent a lot of time talking about this. Sorry. Jess, what have you got?
I just have, like, a very quick and general rave in that not that I don't watch them 11 months, other months out of the year, but it's just especially nice for it to be October and to just be wanting to watch horror movies constantly. I've been watching a lot this month, and it's just been really enjoyable, and I like getting into that mood. So I've just been, like, watching random stuff I found on Shudder, trying to mix in some classics. We watched the original Amityville Horror last night.
Yes.
Just great.
Watch the sequel.
Oh, yeah?
Part two.
Which one? It's many.
Well, the Amityville series is strange. But I actually, the original Amityville Horror, I thought, it's fine. But Amityville 2 is just bat caca nuts. Okay?
It's fun.
Yeah.
All
right.
Okay. I'm intrigued. So, yeah, that's just my general vibe for the month, and it's always fun when October rolls around again, and FTS got together and watched Malignant together, and we haven't all, like, watched a movie together in quite a long time.
And Mark made food, so.
Yes. If anyone doesn't know, Mark, our French Toast Sunday, I believe he's recording a Lamperty.
He sure did, because he just texted me about one of the categories.
Oh, no. Nick, what did you do now? best categories, Nick, but sometimes I want to throttle you. It's amazing.
Ooh.
Well, Mark is an astounding cook. I'm sure if any of you follow him on Instagram, I recommend it, but you are going to see things that you are like very upset you can't eat. Mm. But he cooked us dinner and we all watched Malignant and it was great.
That's an experience, that movie.
Oh, yes. It was very fun to watch with other people.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got, I should call it a rave because it's something wonderful, but it's a little bit of a rant. I am suffering from paralysis of choice. This is one of those things that is so frustrating when you add these streaming services and you look at so many things and you say, what do I watch next? What do I watch? And I spent 15 minutes trying to decide on something to watch, and then I couldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, by that point, I was too tired. And I just added the Criterion Channel, because mm-hmm. I'm going to do a show with Howard next month. And
oh, yay.
I needed to have access to that particular movie. And I've been waiting to pull the trigger on this for way too long. So I got there, and I spent the day watching three movies one day, and then the other night I'm going, well, I should watch something, and I go, no, what else, what else, what else, what else, uh-huh. what else, what else? I'm afraid I'm going to miss something if I don't keep looking.
Mm-hmm. And especially for October, Criterion's yes. got a load of stuff out there.
There's just mm-hmm. a ton of stuff, and that kind of paralysis comes along. I have not, I subscribed to something new yesterday for one purpose only, and people have been promoting it for the last year. I had nothing against it. It was just taking my time to get to it. I did the Apple TV thing for mm-hmm. Ted Lasso. And I literally subscribed to it yesterday. I finished the first season today.
You know? Wow.
Yeah, no, we did all 10 episodes last night and this morning. And I'm going, I know that Foundation is here somewhere, and I'm going to have to find that, and now I'm going to get sucked into that, too. Too many choices, too much stuff to watch, and I can't keep up with it all, damn it. Yeah. And I'm retired. I've got time.
You know what I've started doing, Richard, and because I do the same thing. I start browsing through stuff, and I go, oh, that looks good, but maybe a few clicks, there might be something else. You know, I'm ridiculous. I started a list on like my Google Docs that I've just started typing different categories of things. So it might be like horror movie, sci-fi movie, or it might be something like just a year, 1971, 1983, something like that. And then I've also got starring, I don't know, Jennifer Connelly.
Max von Sydow.
Starring Max von Sydow. Yeah, whoever. Just a bunch of things like that. And then I highlight it, I copy it, I put it in a randomizer on a website, and then I hit randomize it, and then it picks something for me, and then I go find something from whatever it says. And, you know,
good for you.
Made it a little bit better, but it's still not, you know, it's still difficult. But
so Todd, your movie viewing is the Siblist then. Is yeah, what you're telling
yeah,
me.
My
format is now your life.
That just reminded me of something that I saw last night when I was perusing HBO after watching Amityville Horror, is they do have like a Halloween section right now. Mm-hmm. And when you go to it, they have all these different categories, but they have basically a three-door option. One is not scary, one is scary, one is very scary. And every day they have a different movie that they put behind the door.
Ooh.
And
oh,
so
that's
you can,
great.
Yes,
ooh,
you can
let's
select.
Make a deal.
And last night it was, for very scary, it was Funny Games.
Yep.
For scary, I'm blanking. For not scary, it was a Scooby-Doo one, and I was like, that's for Nick Rehack.
Was it on Zombie Island?
It wasn't. It was some random one that I've never seen before.
So speaking of that, I've really wanted to know if Richard has ever watched the Scooby-Doo meets Kiss one.
I not only watch it, I own it. I
own four versions of it because they keep releasing it. With
that's right. You know, if they release it with a different cover, you know, I need that lenticular cover to go along with it too. By the way, I went up to Pittsburgh on Tuesday or Wednesday and saw Kiss again.
Good for you. You know, was it amazing?
It's so much fun. I had great seats. This was the show that got canceled back in August. Oh. And they rescheduled. In August, I drove up to Pittsburgh to do this and meet my friend up there. And then the show got canceled. We were in the off-ramp on the highway when the show
posts,
got canceled.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was, you know, 1,200 miles up, 1,200 miles back, and didn't see the show. So this week, I just flew in and had a great time. But Kiss meets Scooby-Doo, yes, that's a fun one.
I love that so much.
All right. Lisa, you've got a game for us. So tell us what your game is, how we play, and let's do it.
All right. So my game is based on, of course, movies that are sort of survival games. So that kind of thing where, you know, playing to the death. I have four categories, A, B, C, and D. Each one of them has five films, and so I'm looking to see which category you would like, and then whoever gets the most of their five wins the game. So
are you going to give us, like, a synopsis, and we have to guess what the name of the film is? Is that
correct? That is the way the game will work, yes.
Okay, fair enough.
So who would like to go first? Anyone want to come through the room door first?
I'll go.
Well,
Jay,
sure. Go. There you go.
Well, I got two people, so I don't even know who that was.
I'll let Todd go.
All right, Todd.
All right.
A, B, C, or D, Todd?
Let's go with B.
Okay. So Todd is playing here. All right, so your first film. After a wealthy San Francisco banker is given an opportunity to participate in a mysterious game, his life is turned upside down as he begins to question if it may actually be a conspiracy to destroy him.
Is that The Game?
It is The Game. Well done. As I said the word, I went, damn it, I should have edited it. And I'm like, maybe he won't know. Okay. Your second film, six strangers find themselves in a maze of deadly mystery rooms and must use their wits to survive.
I'll just say Cube because I don't know.
It is not Cube, unfortunately. This is 2019's Escape Room.
Okay.
And I read the word room and I went, that's okay.
No, give me as much help. I appreciate it.
Okay. This one might be a little tough then. A cryptic phone call sets off a dangerous game of risks for this character, who is a down-on-his-luck salesman. The game promises increasing rewards for completing a series of tasks, each more sinister than the last. I'll give you a hint. There is a number in the title.
There's a number in the title. I don't know. All I can think of is Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Not a bad guess. It's not quite right, though. This is 2014's 13 Sins.
Oh, don't know that one.
Yeah, 13 different tasks. Each one gets worse as he goes on. Okay, your next title. In a twisted social experiment, 80 Americans are locked in their high-rise corporate office and ordered by an unknown voice coming from the intercom system to participate in a deadly game of kill or be killed.
Is that high-rise?
No.
Okay.
No. This is the Belko experiment, 2016.
All right.
So this is a really, really weird, brutal satire movie, and it's really, really fun. And I still am proud of the fact that this released the same day as the live-action Beauty and the Beast, which I still have not seen. I saw this instead. I thought it was the better movie. All right, Todd, this is your last one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. A bride's wedding night takes a sinister turn when her eccentric new in-laws force her to take part in a terrifying party game. I'll give you a hint. The question I asked you might be a hint for you to this title.
I don't know.
Oh, this is
Bride Wars.
No, sorry, this is Ready or Not.
Oh,
2019.
Not one yet.
I was hoping. I'm like, ready? Are you ready, Todd? All right, so Todd,
I got one. I'm happy with
that. You got one. You did, from the same year that Cube was released. Is that a coincidence? Okay, Nick.
Yes.
A, C, or D?
Go C.
All right. Nick is going for C. A vertical prison with one cell per level, two people per cell. There's food on one platform, and for 2 minutes per day, you get the chance to feed. It's an endless nightmare trapped in a hole.
Oh, I got two in mind. It's because I saw there was like a Netflix thing about it, too. I want to say it's The Platform.
It is, correct.
We have one I knew.
2019's The Platform. That's a hell of a movie, Jess, if you haven't seen that one.
I haven't, but I've seen it come up a lot on Netflix, so maybe
it's
I'll add
that.
It's
pretty cool. Also, add The Cleansing Hour to your Shudder list.
Sponsored by Mr. Clean.
Okay, here we go, Nick. A millionaire offers $10,000 to five people who agree to be locked in a large, spooky rented house overnight with him and his wife.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Todd.
I'm drawing the biggest blank right now.
Well, you got the platform and you're not getting this?
I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Gee whiz. I don't know. I'm just going to say Muppet's Haunted Mansion.
Oh, I'm
good
sorry.
Guess.
That's
guess.
Not it. Would it help if I told you there's a remake?
No, you would not.
Okay. So this is 1959's House on Haunted Hill, starring the incredible Vincent Price.
Oh, see. Never heard of it.
What?
What?
I'd never heard of it.
You've never heard of the one that came out in the 90s?
The one with Jeffrey Rush?
No.
Oh, Nick, you have some wonderful viewing ahead of you. They're both so wonderful.
Okay.
No film shaming here, but no film shaming.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Vincent Price, so.
Yeah, you would love this. And the end, don't judge the new one by the ending, because the ending is atrocious, but Jeffrey Rush is brilliant in it, so.
Okay, I'm for it.
Oh, you need to see these. You're going to be so happy. Okay. Here we go, your third film. Eight candidates for a highly desirable corporate job are locked together in a room and given a test with one seemingly simple question. However, it doesn't take long for confusion to ensue and tensions to unravel.
I got no idea either, so I'm just going to say The Promotion.
No, this is called Exam. This is okay. 2008. So I had to dig deep for some of these.
That's cool. Now my mind is open to them.
I've seen that one. That one kind of ticked me off, but
yeah, I liked that one, but I was digging for it because I can't find it. I want to see it again. It's been a while. Okay. Your next film, a man teaches a young woman how to become a complete weapon, and later she is approached by a group of sadistic teens who kill blonde women for unknown reasons, and the hunting season begins.
So it's not Leon the Professional.
It is not, because she's not blonde.
Is it, read it one more time.
A man teaches a young woman how to become a complete weapon, and later she is approached by a group of sadistic teens who kill blonde women for unknown reasons. The hunting season begins. I'll give you a hint. The title is a term that came up during our discussion of Cube.
That narrows it down.
Yeah.
I'll go a little further. A horror movie trope term that came up in our discussion.
Ah.
There you go.
I know, and it's right on the tip of my tongue too. Oh gosh, I'm just, and this is wrong, but I'm just gonna say it anyway. Damsel in Distress.
No, I'm sorry. This one is Final Girl.
Final Girl. You know what? In my head, I'm like girl, but I couldn't think of the other word. We even talked about how Kazan was the final.
Exactly. Girl. I was like, oh, good, because I had these, and Belko came up in the discussion, mad. And I'm like, I'm leaving little breadcrumbs here. Okay, Nick, I think you're gonna get this one.
All right.
But I'm not sure. Vincent Price may be concerned. A televised competition in which two teenagers from each of 12 districts are chosen at random to fight to the death.
Now, here's the only thing about this one. Like, I want to say it's the Hunger Games.
It is the Hunger Games.
Okay. I didn't know if you were going to try to throw a curveball and do, like, one of the, like, the Bird sequels or whatever.
No. And that's fair because I wasn't – no, Mockingjay.
Hey, okay. Mockingjay, Hummingbird. I think one of them was, like, Pelican Brief or something like that.
Catches fire, right? No, and I agree with you because when people get super specific with, like, random sequels, I think that's unfair. So I will always default to the original.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so – Todd has one. Nick has two.
All right.
So, Jess, why don't you choose next, A or D?
I'll do A, and I'm really nervous because I knew a lot of the other ones, so that makes me think that I'm not going to know any of these.
I think you might. I think you could get two. I think you could at least. No. What I'm saying is you could at least tie Nick. And okay. I think you could do more than that, but I think you can at least tie Nick. So, I mean, you know, we'll try. Again, they are generally horror movies, so sometimes I don't know how niche my knowledge is. I tried to pick ones that were well-known, so. Okay. In the future, the Japanese government captures a class of ninth-grade students and forces them to kill each other under a revolutionary new act.
I was hoping I would get this one.
Aw.
I know this. Why am I blanking?
Because Elwood Jones doesn't sleep. He did a whole podcast about it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
In the future, a Japanese government captures a class of ninth grade students and forces them to kill each other under the Revolutionary New Act.
I'm really irritated. I really
don't
can't
confuse
think of
it
what
with
it's
the James Bond film.
I was hoping I
could. It's
good hint.
You said confused with the James Bond film?
Yeah, don't confuse it with the James Bond film.
Hey, Nick, you know what they call a quarter pounder with cheese in France?
Damn it. You guys really handed that to me. I don't know if that should count.
You knew that one. You knew that.
I really did. That's like, I absolutely know that movie, and that just was not coming to my mind. But yes, Battle Royale.
There you go. All right. Your next film, 12 strangers wake up in a clearing. They don't know where they are or how they got there. They don't know they've been chosen for a very specific purpose to be chased down by some other people in the area.
I believe it's just called The Hunt.
It is, indeed.
Okay.
Good. And there's your two.
That comes to mind immediately, not Battle Royale, like the much more esteemed movie.
What's really funny is the fact that my synopsis actually says they don't know they've been chosen for a very specific purpose, The Hunt. I'm like, why did I not edit that? Okay. Held captive and faced with their imminent executions, 50 strangers are forced to choose the one person among them who deserves to live.
It's ringing a bell, but I don't think I know this one.
If I give you a hint and say that there is a shape involved...
I know it's not Sphere. It's not the square, right?
It's not. That's it's circle.
Oh, really?
You were so darn close with Spear. I'm like, oh, she's so close.
Well,
and this is on Netflix, by the way.
I already got kind of a freebie, so I'm willing to take that one.
Okay. Desperate to help her ailing brother, a young woman unknowingly agrees to compete in a deadly game hosted by a sadistic aristocrat. I will give you a hint here that they are given a difficult choice to make in this game.
This also sounds really familiar.
A lot of these are very recent films.
Yeah. I'm gonna give up on this one.
This is Would You Rather.
Oh, okay.
This is Brittany
I haven't
Snow.
Seen that.
Yeah, this one gets pretty uncomfortable. I can't remember if it gets really gory, but it's certain moments have the potential to, and I can't remember whether they actually go the extra step, because it's been a while since I've seen this one, too. Very good for tension, though. All right, your last one, Jess. Teenagers decide to pass idle time by playing an online game that has a horror theme. But the action taking place on their computer screens becomes a terrifying reality when they realize that each time a character dies during the game, the figure's human overseer dies as well.
Hmm. This also sounds like a recent one.
Not as recent.
Hmm.
Teenagers decide to pass idle time by playing an online game with a horror theme, but the action taking place on their computer screens becomes a terrifying reality when they realize that each time a character dies during the game, the figure's human overseer dies as well.
I know it's not this, but Slender Man?
No, this one is Stay Alive.
Okay.
Which is a really silly movie, but it's one of my favorites. It doesn't age well either. So,
perfect.
Tied with Nick with two films. All right, Richard, are you ready?
What's the over-under on this one?
Honestly, Richard, I think you have a chance of winning.
Well, it'll be a miracle. I would be surprised because on the last two, it's like I had one. You know, Battle Royale. And I've never seen it. I just knew the scenario.
You have the list that has the two oldest films in my game. Oh, not the two oldest. House on Haunted Hill is older, but you have two others here.
All right. So, well, let's keep our fingers crossed that I get one.
You got a possibility. I think you're a contender here. Okay. A year after a woman is killed in a hit and run, her wealthy husband invites a group of friends to spend a week on his yacht playing a scavenger hunt mystery game.
The game turns
out to be all too real and all too deadly.
The Last of Sheila.
There you go, Richard. See?
All right. I scored. I'm not going to go zero.
I don't think you are. Definitely not. Not with that one. And I think you have a chance of winning. I really do. Two strangers awaken in a room with no recollection of how they got there, and soon they discover they're pawns in a deadly game perpetrated by a notorious serial killer.
Saw.
Yes.
Wow, I got two. That means I'm tied.
You are, and you have three more to go.
It's a miracle.
All right. A homeless man is hired as a survival guide for a group of wealthy businessmen on a hunting trip in the mountains, unaware that they are killers who hunt humans for sport, and he is their new prey.
Oh, I know this scenario, but I can't. And there are four or five movies that are similar to this.
Right, and I will tell you it's not Most Dangerous Game, but it's that scenario.
Yeah, I'm not going to get it.
This is Surviving the Game. This is Ice-T from 1994.
Okay.
I dug deep on this one. That's all right. Can't get them all, Richard. Okay.
Dang.
A high school senior finds herself immersed in an online game of truth or dare where her every move starts to become manipulated by an anonymous community of, quote, watchers.
Oh, I think I've seen the trailer for this, but I can't. And truth or dare, that would have been my guess. Damn it. Social media. I'm just guessing.
No, this is called Nerve.
Nerve, okay.
I should have picked D.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Have you known all of these, Jess?
Yes, I have.
All right, Richard, this is the last one in your category. I do have a tiebreaker if we need it. But your last film. In dystopian America, a falsely convicted policeman gets his shot at freedom when he must forcibly participate in a TV game show where convicts battle killers for their freedom.
The Running Man.
See, I told you you would win.
Oh, wow. It's a miracle. It's a miracle.
And I did not manipulate any of these. This is exactly the order in which I put them.
Okay, well,
cool. Richard
good.
Won the game. Yay, Richard. Ooh.
I'm surprised. I really am, because like I said, we went through several of those other categories, and I'm going, yeah, I was lucky to get one or two.
And I'm pretty random about the way I put them. Like, I try and spread them out and whatever, but yeah. Do you want to know the tiebreaker one?
Yes, let's hear it.
So I had two tiebreaker questions. The first would be identify the movie by the description, and then the second tiebreaker question would have been to identify the year it was released. So the description, in a dystopian future, a cross-country automobile race requires contestants to run down innocent
Death
pedestrians.
Race, Death Race 2000.
Now, can you tell me the year it was released?
1975.
It is 75, so there you go.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't know if you wanted the original, if you wanted the...
I would have wanted the original, yeah. Always default to the original.
I'm thinking Richard was so quick in that because he probably went and saw it in the theater.
Damn straight.
Yeah.
See, I looked out for you, Richard. I had a lot of up-to-date, like, contemporary films, but I knew that you were playing, too. I was going to keep an eye on you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate
it just,
that.
You were lucky that you got D.
Well, I don't have anything to plug this week, so winning doesn't really give me much victory celebration. But let's hear what you guys have to plug this week. Todd, what have you got going?
So I just posted a new episode of the Forgotten Filmcast earlier this week. I was joined by author Christina Lane to discuss a film called Phantom Lady. It's not a horror film, but it's a really slick film noir. So check that out. Walt sent me our episode on The Talented Mr. Ripley is finally up. So that's out there as well. Check them out.
Good deal. And Lisa, how about you?
So we are... heading towards episode 9 of the Sib List. My list of doom came up, and we are watching Schindler's List. My brother and I have never seen it. It's my dirty film nerd secret that I've never seen Schindler's List, and it has come up finally. So the two of us are watching it. Unfortunately, we're going to be a little bit late in posting the episode because it's a long movie to watch. You can catch me coming up soon on Howard Kasner's Pop Art. I'm actually recording with him later today. And we're going to be talking about my choice was Hell House LLC. His choice is Man Bites Dog. So that'll be a cool pairing to talk about. And on Between the Scares, Jason Soto and I are going full tilt spooky season. And we just released an episode on Halloween Kills. We're going to be talking about the Welcome to the Blumhouse films on Amazon. And we recently just released Insidious. So we've got a lot going on over there.
Okay.
And it all sounds October appropriate.
Very much so.
Jess, do you have anything that you're plugging?
I don't have anything that I've done recently. It's been a little while, and I have maybe something coming up later in the month. I'm supposed to be guesting on the Deep Blue Sea pod again, even though it's not about Deep Blue Sea. I believe we're going to be talking about the 47 Meters Down movies.
Nice.
So. Still sharks, but not deep blue sea ones. But we still have yet to record, so that'll probably be out in a little while.
Down the road, we'll keep our eye open for it. I can always retroactively put in the link when it happens.
Oh,
assuming it happens. Nick, how about you? Rehack Radio?
Rehack Radio over on... God, it's embarrassing. I can't even think of where it's on. Just Google Rehack Radio. It's going to pop up. Recently on the Deep Blue Sea podcast, we talked about Shark Night, myself and Jay. Over on Popcorn Auteur, we talked about Paul Thomas Anderson, my favorite living director. Movies, Films, and Flicks with Mark Hoffmeyer, episode 389. We talked about movie soundtracks we would bring to a deserted island. And I know it's being recorded as we speak, the Lamberty episode. I submitted several categories. I think it's some of my best work. I'm not going to say magnum opus because that's a bit strong, but I'm pretty proud of myself.
I cannot wait to hear this episode.
Oh, everybody's got something to look forward to. That's always a good thing. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today, and thank Lisa especially for hosting the show. You did a great job, and the film was a lot of fun. So
thank you for giving me the chance.
No problem, no problem. So as we say goodbye, let's start with Jess. Thank you for coming, Jess.
Thanks for having me.
And Nick, always.
I'm just happy to be here.
And Todd.
Thanks a bunch. It was fun.
That's it. You know, it may be hard for you to understand, but there's no conspiracy. Nobody's in charge. It's a headless blunder operating under the illusion of a master plan. Sounds like the Lambcast.
Ain't that the truth?
Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell! Go to hell.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.